And aloha. This is the Travel Angel Radio Show, and we have a very, very special show today. I'm so excited. We have Tony Childs calling in from Byron Bay, Australia. Aloha, Tony.
Aloha.
So good to have you calling in. And David Corson just got back from Nepal. Well, just a couple days ago, right?
2 days ago, Cindy.
2 days ago. And we had kept track of what you'd done there and the work you were going to do and the money you raised to help. So, and interesting enough, I have never really talked to you, Tony, before, but I know a couple of your friends from the Topanga days, Judy Stein, and I also know Gregor. But it's so good to finally speak with you. I've been a fan of yours, and I've actually played your music. All the different radio stations I've worked in. One of my favorite songs, actually, which I still play on one of my stations, is Walk Like Angels Walk. And I love Don't Walk Away, and I love Many Rivers to Cross, and just done beautiful, beautiful work. And here it is, an interesting world international coalition kind of coming together and helping Nepal. You just got through with a big concert to raise money for Nepal in Byron Bay just a few days. Well, it was May 30th, it was, right?
That's right. So just basically just a little over a week ago. Yeah.
Well,
yeah, we raised $50,000, which was fantastic. And we had Crystal Castle, where we performed, Naren and Sono, we were both in Bali. We were performing in Bali concert, and Naren and Sono, the owners of Crystal Castle, were there. And immediately we heard the news, what happened to Nepal, and said, okay, can we do something at Crystal Castle? And they have, Crystal Castle has stunning grounds, massive crystals. He's been collecting crystals for 30 years. Mm. And they have a world peace stupa that was blessed by the Dalai Lama, one of seven on the planet. And it just seemed appropriate for us to have the concert there, the benefit concert, in front of the peace stupa.
That's amazing. I can't wait to see what it looked like. I mean, it was such a synchronistic situation. It's so strange because David Corson had left Nepal about 3 days before the earthquake, and you had been there to shoot a clip for your new CD that's going to come out called, I believe it's going to be called Beautiful Noise?
It's All a Beautiful Noise is the new album.
It's All a Beautiful Noise. And you had, tell us the story of what, you brought in a whole crew to shoot a video there.
Well, yeah, it was a part of to have the experience, really, as well as capturing film and then also capturing footage for another production that I have called Citizens of the Planet. But we went, a total of 52 people. It was a crowdfunded event, as I'm a crowdfunded artist. So a portion of it was sponsored and fueled by fans from around the world who came and joined us on the trek. We had 25 Sherpas, two guides, camera crew, and my band, and generators and sound system that we air freighted in, and other amps and things like that, keyboards and keyboard stands, and all the kinds of craziness that goes with having a full electric band, not an acoustic setup.
Did you have to yak them in?
You know what? It's so funny because we thought we would yak them, but Poon Hill is below the yak line.
Okay.
And we thought about doing them on donkeys, but we were told by our guides and the people helping us that it would be much better, you know, to hire actual people, the Sherpas themselves. It's much better for the economy than just going with, and so that's what we decided to do. And we had a wonderful crew. The sad part is right now there's still six of our Sherpas missing in action. We haven't been able to track them down yet. Nobody's been able to find out if they're okay still, which is a bit disconcerting.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure David could talk about that, because when he came back, three of the people he had helping him and working with him. I guess a couple might have been Sherpas did die in that earthquake.
Well,
right?
Sherpas are the high altitude specialists, the one that summit the greatest mountains of the world. The people that carry supplies are porters. Mm-hmm. And so we did not lose any friends that were Sherpas, mm-hmm. but porters, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it was one of those experiences where you were able to be there and get connected as you were. I mean, in the early days, something connected you because, David, you wanted to go back 12 times, now 13. So there is, I guess, this interconnection. I've only been there once. I was in Kathmandu on my way to Tibet. And there is certainly that heartstring, soulstring connection that happens, and it obviously connected to you. Did you were able to capture your track on video, and everything was captured there that time when you performed, Tony?
Oh, yeah, we did. We got some amazing footage. In fact, if people go to my Facebook page, they can see some of the footage from there and some of the shots from Poon Hill, because it was just so fresh, right?
Yeah.
And, I think the feeling of the land and the place of that Annapurna range for me, it's when I 92, after I had that experience, I just felt like I wanted to bring all the people I've ever loved in my life with me and have 21 days on that circuit, because there were no telephones. You were completely unplugged. It's not like that now, but in 92 it was. And it was just such a fantastic, I felt like I was walking through a giant air purifier.
I was there in 97. And when was the first time you were there, David?
First time we went to Nepal was 2002.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you obviously got the connection as well. And so this is going to be very, very impactful. It's a great gift that you were able to have this concert in that fabulous place. I've never heard of it. I've never gone to Byron Bay, but I haven't been to Australia. I mean, you used to live in Kauai, didn't you, for a while, or here somewhere here?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, I lived in Kauai for 13 years.
And then you...
And I moved here because I married an Australian man and needed to make music again.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. So you have the Hawaiian connection too. And it's funny because I'm told by my other friend who I've had on this radio show, Guy Fisher, who lives down there in Byron Bay, there's a similarity to kind of like Paia and the windsurfing capital of the world here. And you might have been to Paia here on Maui, but there's a similarity actually between here and Byron Bay. So there is this amazing connection. And so do you love it there in Australia?
I love the Shire. It's, when you say that, there really is. I think that there's some ley lines that there's the same type of people here that you would find on Maui, that you would find actually up into the San Juan Islands of southern, Vancouver Island and in that sort of area. We seem to be tracking the same people. And then also, too, a huge, huge community of people connected with Nepal here as well, which I find really interesting. We raised over this Shire, this Northern Rivers area, raised over $240,000 for Nepal.
My gosh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. Well, you've taken, even though the concert's happened, you're continuing on with the cause. And you tell us about this book. You're going to be doing a special book to help rebuild Nepal book. Is that going to be called Rebuild Nepal book? Is that the name?
Yeah, it's called Rebuild Nepal. And basically what it is that we've got now, we just did on the 30th, we've had a bunch of different artists, so we're making the best of the evening, editing it down to an hour radio broadcast special that's going to go out to 170 radio stations around Australia. And as a part of that, we're creating a book. I had created a book for Citizens of the Planet, a 52-page book for another project. We're using the same template. So the graphic artist who helped me design that book has come on and donating her design time to create this book. And it will have a DVD and a CD and pictures from the evening, and some pictures from our trek in Nepal. So we'll include all of that and some, you know, just some inspirational words from different people who participated in the concert event that we did.
So people can pre-purchase the book. And again, this is a great idea. I mean, sometimes you get a CD in the back of a book, but this is the benefit concert and the DVD and the book. And it's going to be, I believe, $55. Is that the cost?
That's exactly right. It's $55. And if people go to www.mycause.com.au, that's mycause.com.au, and search Tony Childs Rebuild Nepal in their search, you'll find it and you can make a donation. And everybody who gives $55 or more will receive this book.
And that's, in case people couldn't hear, mycause, mycause.com.au, standing for Australia. And then you search Tony, T-O-N-I, Childs-Rebuild Nepal Project. And it's really, I mean, there is this worldwide need that people do want to give. And you know, Tony, David knows that. We all know that, you know, there's the initial stories of what happens with a terrible, terrible disaster like the earthquake. But there's very little follow-up and awareness sometimes after the initial stories. And having,
that's right.
I mean, and it's so sad because the work now is so important to be done in the rebuilding process. It's we're going to talk to David here about what he saw and what he's trying to do. But just as you said, I mean, David, there must be so many people who have lost loved ones and so many people who can't find out even if their loved ones are alive or dead, and then they have to presume they're dead, and then there's really no closure for a lot of them. I'm sure that happened with some of your friends, right, David?
Absolutely, Cindy.
I mean, it's so the rebuilding process, I mean, what do you think, David? How long do you think it's for the what you just saw from your latest trip? How long is the rebuilding process going to take?
We're not talking about months. We're not talking about years. We're talking about decades.
Really?
Absolutely. One-third of the entire nation was severely impacted. Not so much Kathmandu. The world media was focused on Kathmandu, the only really large city in all of Nepal. About 5 million plus people live in Kathmandu, but the infrastructure, it remains relatively intact. Most of the buildings are intact. There's a lot of cracks. There's a few buildings that have been destroyed. A lot of people are still camping out because of the influx of internally displaced people, IDPs, coming down from the villages, from the mountains into Kathmandu. But Kathmandu remains largely intact, unlike the villages up in the mountains of Nepal, which are utterly destroyed. And we'll talk about that a little bit later.
Wow. So that's interesting because, again, I'm just able to watch the media or see pictures that people like you or your friends, or maybe if you still have connections there, Tony, you've maybe been able to get it. David's been able to say he's actually been able to get more connections and information through Facebook, especially in the earlier days, than he was any other way.
That's true. And I think that's how everybody was kind of getting it.
Yeah, and so to think that some of the places, I mean, possibly even places you traveled to, may not even be, you know, around. I know some of the villages you went to, some of them were really hard to get to, I'm sure, David, but a lot of them might have even been completely covered in rock slides.
Well, that's true, Cindy. There's generally in the eastern area of Nepal, and I'm painting with a broad brush here, but generally up in the hills, the villages are about 90% destroyed. Now, remember, these homes are 1- and 2-story homes that are made with brick and with mud. And so with an earthquake of this magnitude, they're going to come down. And then buildings in the more remote villages that go up to maybe 4 or 5 stories maximum in height, they are almost all down. The rebar that is being used in the construction of the building, and we brought back photographs and so forth, is less than the diameter of your small finger. And the cement has been watered down, mixed with a lot of sand, a lot of water, very little cement. What building codes there are in Nepal are just totally ignored for the sake of cutting cost. And as a result, with the poor construction and with an earthquake of this magnitude, the buildings in the eastern part of Nepal just collapsed totally.
Wow. When we hear this, I just want to, let people know. That's why something, and what you're doing, Tony, and what, of course, David's doing, is so important, because this is going to take so long to rebuild, and we may not be hearing about it on the newscast, but with help with people like David and people like you doing these concerts, I mean, just the fact that you were able to get that area and that your area donated so much is really very vital and very key to what the future of Nepal is really going to be. So I encourage people to stay in touch with people like you. You can find Tony on Facebook. Yes, go ahead.
I was just going to say, we're committed. Naren and Sono and myself were talking last night and yesterday about that we're committed. For the next 10 years, we're going to continue to do an annual concert at Crystal Castle for our Rebuild Nepal. This was a decision that we made. We actually broke it to everybody that's a part of the Crystal Castle team the other night. We did a big thank you with pizza and bubbles and all of that other stuff to say thank you. But it is, just like David said, it's we have a situation where it is going to take a very, very long time. And how I think the other thing is getting to come back to Nepal is another, because tourism is a very, very big part of their economy. So before we left, we already had talked with the captain in Gorapani. We gave the very first concert ever given on Poon Hill, and his family are the Poon family, and he wanted us to come back not this October. We had made plans for the following October. This is before the earthquake hit, and to do a music festival there up in Poon Hill once a year and do an annual festival. So I'm really excited about moving forward with that as well as a way to help get people back to Nepal. But right now, like David says, and what we all know, we need right now, the monsoons are coming. They're starting to come. And it's really important that we get and support infrastructure that's much more than just tents, so they can actually be covered and kept dry during the next 2.5 months going forward. And we're really anxious about that. And so as soon as we finish here with the broadcast, we're going to be going back to Nepal and really looking to help. We have some ideas about what we're going to do to help that infrastructure move as quickly as it can through the villages and the remote areas that are in most need, like as David has said.
Well, David had gone through this. You know, it was interesting because in the very early days, he started making preparations to go back, and he brought, I believe you came with 8 people from Maui, right?
There's 5 people from Maui.
5 people. Mm-hmm. And you were originally thinking tents, but and you were able to get tents from where that was easiest to get to some of the villages?
Well, we had tents that were donated, but we found upon arrival, Cindy, and this would be news, and Tony, you might want to consider this, that you're absolutely right, Tony, what she said was right on. With the monsoon coming, there is a disaster in the making. The earth is very, very unstable, and as we know, Nepal is considered the rooftop of the world, the great Himalayan mountains there, and with the shaking, even with the slight decrease in the elevation of Mount Everest itself, the ground is very unstable, and so the slides have already started. I was caught in one small landslide myself. But great landslides are coming because of the heavy rains with the monsoon and the unstableness of the earth. So those villages that are not in harm's way as a result of the upcoming landslides or avalanches, if you would, are in desperate need of good roofs. And we have found that the choice of the people by far is for the zinc roofs, what we would call corrugated tin.
That's right.
Yeah, and that's and we were able to provide 250 homes, and they said
wonderful.
I thought you'd be excited, Tony.
Really wonderful.
And they're easy to transport, Tony. You might consider
they are
just the sheets of zinc, and then you can put them in trucks and take them as far as you can by ground transportation, and then they're just carried on the backs, as you said, Tony, of the porters into the more remote villages. So we were able to provide homes for or roofs for 250 homes, and then the walls, temporarily at least through the monsoon, will be just be made of bamboo, such as we're very familiar with here in Maui and in the Pacific Islands, and later on that can be built up with bricks. But the roofs will provide.
You know what we're doing? Reaching out where they're taking rice bags, they're splitting them open and then folding them long ways so they can put earth into those bags and use them like sandbags and create like 2.5 feet to 3 feet high walls around those and creating concert huts with the tin roofs, right, with that corrugated iron.
And so they
can have a place where they can stay dry and keep the wind off of them, you know, and all of that, and keep it a little bit more watertight along the bottom of these things. And then they can, they're very easy because they can just fill them with earth from the earth, right? Just dirt from the earth. And so that's part of where we're going. We're kind of that same line, but now we're adding bags into the mix that are pre-made and just getting them to the villages. And our strategy is to get villages, train them how to build the Quonset huts that these guys in Nepal that we met with are already doing. And then what they're doing is teaching the people the village, and then asking the village to make, here's all the ones, make your buildings, and then take a group of villagers to the next village and propagating it so it gets out and can spread as quickly as possible.
And it's really got to be a grassroots situation. If you're just tuning in, I'm talking with Tony Childs, who's calling in from Byron Bay, Australia, and David Corson. Both have just recently come back from Nepal. David just a couple days ago. Tony was filming a concert and doing a video presentation, did a concert up there that was videotaped just a few days before the earthquake. Tony just completed a benefit concert in Byron Bay at Crystal Castle, and raised I think you said $50,000. Was it 50?
That's right.
That's wonderful. So now, of course, you know, if you're tuning in, the idea is everyone can help, and there are people that you, Tony, have made connections, and that David know and makes connections with that are established that will go out there. And I know 100% of the money you get, David, is going to the cause of helping people. And I'm sure, Tony, it's the same with you. The thing is, we all want, you know, we're told, you know, give the money to United Way, give the money to Salvation, give the money to Red Cross. But sometimes, in my opinion, some of the organizations like Red Cross and the others are so bogged down with the bureaucracy and the people, it might just go to Kathmandu. It may not even get out to these villages where, as you said, David, I mean, there's so much need for help. And it's really hard for some of these organizations, if they don't have established pathways, to even understand where the help is needed, in my opinion, right?
You're absolutely right, Tony. And as just returning less than 72 hours ago from Nepal, unless you are aware of the culture, the Eastern mindset, the culture of the villages of Nepal, the caste system, and the politics with over 30 political parties there, and all of the rest, it's very difficult quickly to untangle all of this. And I certainly am not an expert by any stretch of the imagination, but having worked there and served there over the last dozen years or so, it's been a real joy to work in the in the villages, and this is where the great need is. A lot of international aid and effort has been focused on the capital, and that's great, that's wonderful. But unfortunately, the small villages, which make up the majority of the population of Nepal, they are virtually unreached. They are just totally on their own. So whether it's with the called chink or zinc or corrugated tin roofs, or whether it's with bags of rice, whatever it might be, whatever help can reach the small isolated villages that are accessible primarily only by foot, that is the greatest need, and that's where the attention needs to be focused.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm just so thrilled that you're able to be working with this, Tony. I know you did one CD. It's interesting because I'm working on my new CD project is Spoken Word Music, which is going to be A Rise Above Abuse, which is overcoming and becoming aware of domestic violence and how you can overcome the pain of abuse and domestic violence. And I think you did a CD for something like that as well. Maybe it was two CDs ago?
Well, it was it ended up going out on Keep the Faith. But Eve Ensler, who wrote Vagina Monologues, asked me to write a song that would inspire people to end violence against women and girls. And I wrote a song, Because You're Beautiful.
Wonderful. Wow. Well, it's funny because I wrote a song, actually a poem for this one called You Are Beautiful, because if anyone's gone through abuse or domestic violence, that's one of the issues that they have about worthiness or their own beauty. So
that's right.
Yeah. And that's wonderful. I'd love to hear that sometime. I don't know if I've heard that one. I'd have to get that. So I'd love to connect with you again on that. But for right now, people, the best way to contact you or donations is what way, Tony?
Well, best way right now is if you go to mycause.au and search for Tony Child's Rebuild Nepal. And if you do that, that'll take you to exactly the page. And then get that book. Free order that book. You 55 or more, and you get a book with photos and music and a DVD. And these artists that performed, there's just some beautiful voices, some beautiful songwriters and singers that performed on the night. And I'm really excited about this broadcast. And that's basically what the CD is. It's the evening with commentary and by some of the Bay FM, who were the DJs. They came and recorded it and really got behind our event and made it possible that we would have this national broadcast.
Well, you'll have to get me a copy so we can broadcast it here.
Yes.
Yeah, that'd be great. And 100% of the funds are going to the people in Nepal?
100%. 100%. We've chosen four areas. What we're doing for with the money is that initial thing we gave to Tents for Nepal, just to help in the immediate, just with the canvas tents idea, where they're making actual canvas tents and then they're using bamboo and all of that. So there's that bit. But then we know that we need to go deeper. There's a mental health right now. There's some people are taking advantage of children and trafficking is issue. Mm-hmm. And at times like this where things get kind of chaotic and misplaced and all of this stuff, so there's people on the ground who are doing that and really helping with people's mental health, right? And then we've got monks there that have been working and being trained for an earthquake of this magnitude for several years and who are going out into the villages and helping with medical treatments, and there just to help people getting out into the ground, getting supplies there, figuring out what villages are actually needing, and working to get them what they need. And so we're supporting them. And the last bit that we're doing is we're going to Nepal ourselves so we can really see what's happening on the ground and look at what are going to be the best way to get what groups are really, pulling off some really great stuff, so we can just be there to ensure the money's going to get exactly the right hand.
That's wonderful. I think those are the Sichuan Monastery?
That's right. There, thank you. Thank you, thank you.
Yeah, well, that makes a difference because, as you said, that's the interconnection. They know the people. They know the ways, and when you're connected with that, they're there to do the good, you know. So I mean, I'm so glad you're doing this. It's really making a difference, and obviously you've dedicated yourself to giving back, Tony, and I've always loved your music. Like I say, just walk and talk like the angels talk. Oh, my God, I love that song. So no, it's such a great song, and that one came out about 20 years ago. No, 15 years ago?
No, it's much longer.
Is it longer than that?
Yeah, when did it come? 1988?
Oh, my gosh. Well, it still stands. It's still wonderful. You've done great work, and I just love to see what you're doing, dedicating your life to helping now. So God bless you.
Well, thank you. Just got to do it, right?
You got to do it.
You got to do it.
And you're doing it. So congratulations on that. And, stay in touch with me, and we'll see what we can do about getting that broadcast furthered out there, okay?
Well, thank you so much. I really do appreciate you reaching out. And David, lovely to hear what you're doing. Hopefully we'll see each other in about a month if you're going back.
Maybe.
Mahalo nui loa. So nice to meet you, Tony.
You can connect with him on Facebook too, David Corson. If you're not full, you're pretty full. Your Facebook was almost full, but we'll get you hers, okay, and connect you.
Absolutely.
Okay, a big aloha to you, Tony. Thank you
aloha.
So much.
Aloha.
Bye.
Aloha.
So nice to talk to her. I thought it was very, like I said, synchronistic that when I found out she was doing this, you know, that we had to connect. But I know a lot of our listeners heard, and many of our listeners did help, and some donated even. We have wonderful Maui friends and friends throughout the world who were aware that you were going to go back. What were the challenges that you faced?
Well, first of all, Cindy, I would like to just reiterate and say a big mahalo nui loa to our Maui ohana. For those individuals that did donate to help the people of Nepal that have suffered this great tragedy, the KAOI Radio Group, Visionary Entertainment, and, of course, your show, Cindy, and your personal support and your personal encouragement and financial support has meant so much. So, Cindy, I did return just less than 72 hours ago from Nepal. We had a team of five individuals from the islands, and we joined with all men this time. We joined with five other men from Nepal, and so they're a team of 10 of us that they've all had experience, all the men that have traveled with us, they've all had experience numerous times in Nepal, and we traveled to the eastern part of Nepal, which was the area hit hardest by the earthquake. The official death toll stands just under 9,000 right now, but the government is in disarray. As you know, just a few years ago, the king was overthrown, the Maoist party came to control, and that is fragmented into over 30 different political groups. And so there's a lot of political infighting within the within the government of Nepal itself. And so if the true death toll were known, and if it were made public, that would just cause even greater unrest and distrust of the government. So they are making every effort to keep the numbers down. Realistically, in talking with people that I've known over the years, people that I respect, people that live and work in Nepal, the number is at least triple that. So we're looking
at... Is it really?
It really is. And anybody that's worked there, has traveled there, has served there any amount of time would concur with that. So we're looking at a death toll of close to 25,000, if not over 25,000. That does not include the injured. That does not include those, as Tony mentioned, that are... suffering emotionally as a result of the earthquake. A case in point, Cindy, is we were distributing bags of rice. We distributed over 5,000, roughly 60-pound bags of rice, dal to make dalbat, which is the national dish there in Nepal, cooking oil and salt. And we were in this one particular village distributing all these bags of rice, and we were under a covered canopy, not a building, but just a canopy. And all of a sudden, just as we were getting things organized to distribute these bags of rice, there was this massive scream. And in Nepali, the language of Nepal, everybody said in unison with their, cried out in unison with their eyes wide open and just screaming, "It's coming, it's coming." And as one, like a school of fish or a flock of birds in harmony, they immediately turned about face and started running out of that cover that we were in. And sure enough, the earthquake came. So we experienced five earthquakes while we were there. These are aftershocks, not major earthquakes, but aftershocks. But what it did is I observed firsthand the terror, the the anxiety, the fear,
the trauma.
The trauma.
Post-traumatic stress.
It is post-traumatic stress, Cindy. Yeah. You're absolutely right. And it's gone on day after day. Just the, you know, the less than 2 weeks that we were there after the earthquake and working up in the mountains, we personally experienced 5 aftershocks. They weren't major. They were minor. And one landslide that could have been major. Unfortunately, it was minor, and no harm came. But we were literally running for our lives there in this small landslide. And so it's the injury in addition to the death. It's the trauma. One man that we spoke with in the village of Narsari took us to his home, which was in rubble, as about 90 to 95% of the homes were. And he said, my daughter was crying out to me, Daddy, help me, Daddy, help me, Daddy, help me. But by the time I could get the bricks off just using my bare hands, she had died. And we went from home to home to home to home. And so many of these homes, Cindy, we would, talking with the people, they would say, this is where my son died. This is where my daughter died. This is where my wife or my husband died, or my grandmother or grandson or whatever it might be, over and over and over again. And there's virtually no aid whatsoever. It's difficult to get to. Kathmandu is easy. You fly into Kathmandu. You can stay in an air-conditioned hotel. You can travel to your hotel by air-conditioned taxi. And that's where the vast majority of these large agencies, including the United Nations, are going. And very, very little of that aid, there is some, but very little, as Tony mentioned earlier, is getting out to the villages. So my hat's off to the people of Maui, Maui County, to you and others that supported the work with the volunteers, all of whom paid their own way to go. They bought their own tickets. They gave their own time, their own expertise, to go into these remote villages and to help in the physical rebuilding, as well as just letting people know that we care.
It is got to be different. I mean, here you know the people. You've been in touch through Facebook with what happened. But the reality of being there, hearing these stories, and seeing it is always so different than just hearing about it, isn't it?
It really is, Cindy. And I would encourage any of you here from Maui. We've been going from Maui now for over a dozen years to Nepal. And if you would like to join us on a two-week mission, you do not need to have a medical background. We've taken dentists, we've taken physicians, but we've also taken police officers and firefighters and carpenters and homemakers and businessmen and women, people from all walks of life. It's been said the greatest ability is availability. And Cindy, you're absolutely right. Just going to the rooftop of the world, this fascinating nation of Nepal with its great history and wonderful culture, but then getting to know the people living in these small villages. Right now, we're sleeping on the ground in small tents because the houses are gone, the villages are gone.
So are most people in these small villages, when you go out there, what are they? Are they just sleeping outside, or do some have tents? What's the situation when you go and see? Are most people sleeping outside right now?
That's correct, Cindy. Most of them are. Once again, in Kathmandu, in the larger populated areas of Nepal, there are a lot of tents. The government of China has been very, very generous. In fact, you see more tents from China. They're blue in color, and they have the Chinese logos on them and so forth, than all the other relief agencies combined. Of course, the roads are still open from China into Nepal.
Are they paved, or are they still dirt? The roads from China?
Both. There's only 3 roads, but they're part of it's dirt, part of it's paved. But they're able to get the trucks in, and they're able to get the supplies in from China. Mm-hmm. And so China has been very, very generous. Second would be India, which has been very, very generous as well. And then after that would be the various relief agencies that are working there. But it's the small villages, the forgotten people, the wide spots in the road, and then so many of these villages. Once you drive to the villages, then the people live sometimes miles and miles and miles away. The only way to get there is by foot.
Wow.
And so...
So you don't even sometimes know. I mean, you're lucky just to get to the small villages, let alone these people that are outside the small villages,
right? That's right. In this most recent trip, we didn't travel too far by foot, but the tin was carried on the backs of the regular people. The porters are the ones that carry the heavy loads, in the lower elevations. The Sherpas are the ones that are the expert mountain climbers, and they're mm-hmm. the ones that are climbing up snow and ice and summiting Mount Everest and all these other great mountains. But by and large, the bulk of the supplies are carried on the backs of the people. They could be, it could be a grandmother, could be a grandfather or a mm-hmm. small child. And so they're just sleeping out in the open right now. And that's where this tin comes in very handy. And they certainly know how to build. They've been building for generations mm-hmm. after generations.
So you can get the supplies there and they can build them. So you didn't need to build the different...
That's right. They didn't mm-hmm. need us to show them how to build. Mm-hmm. We were there. We worked alongside them. But they know their way. Their way is different. The Eastern way is different than the Western way. Mm-hmm. And it's not that one is better or one is worse. Mm-hmm. They're just different. And they're in the East and we want to respect the culture mm-hmm. of the East and the Nepalese culture. So they know exactly how to build, and they know how to use this tin that you provided. Thank you.
How does the faith, I mean, this is really a test of faith, and the sacrifice is beyond belief that they've had to give. How are you seeing that faith providing? Is it able to sustain some people more? I mean, I can't even begin to imagine when you see some villages have, I mean, devastation. And I would imagine maybe the majority of people in some of these villages have been killed. So what do you try to do? You're a man of faith. You work very closely with South Kihei, Calvary Chapel, and yet you say you're respecting their way of doing and being, which is wonderful. So what do you do to try to provide some kind of sustenance, some kind of hope when there's all this devastation and tragedy that they've had to incur in their lives?
Well, that's a great question, Cindy. Thank you so much for asking. All of our volunteers, without apology, are Christian. Mm-hmm. But when we go to Nepal, which is primarily, almost exclusively, an interesting blend of Hinduism and Buddhism, we want to respect the culture. We want to respect the religion. We want to respect the people. That is extremely, extremely important. We are guests in their country, no matter how many times we visit, no matter how long we stay. The last time my wife and I were there for a month, we are still a guest in their country, and we want to honor that. In the Hindu religion, there are about 330 million gods, and no one knows all the gods' names. Mm. That's just too many to know. And so when we arrived in the village, it was very interesting. The village of Nasri, which was in the eastern part of Nepal, up in the mountains, the foothills of the Himalayas, not high up, of course. But they said, we have been praying to our gods, and our gods have been silent. And so, you are gods. Thank you for coming. You are gods. And right away we said, no, we're not gods. We're just people. We're just people just like you are. But we do believe in the God of love. And as a Christian, unapologetically, we know that we can know God through Jesus Christ. And we take these opportunities to share in a very gentle way, but only when the doors open. Culturally, it would be very, very wrong, and it would be counterproductive if the people were led to believe that we had an ulterior motive in coming to proselytize them, if you would. But when it comes up, when they ask, then we do freely share our faith as Christians, that we believe in the God of love, and above all, God is a God of love, and that we can know that God of love personally through Jesus Christ. And as we spend more time there and as we get to know the people, if they are interested, which almost always they are, then we share the simple Christmas story. We share the Easter story with them. But on this trip, Cindy, that wasn't the focus. The focus was on providing the rice, the dalbat, the cooking oil, the salt, and of course the roof material. And this area was an area that we have not had that much experience in eastern Nepal. We've been focused more on western Nepal, on northern Nepal, northwestern Nepal, up much, much higher in the Himalayas. Although they knew we were Christians, we did not attempt to proselytize or attempt to indicate that we had an ulterior motive, that these gifts came with a string attached.
Well, I do want to interject here that you do offer your services and you pay for your own tickets, and everyone that goes pays their own way, and all the donations made went all towards the supplies through the kindness and the help in your group that follows you, you have quite a few followers on Facebook, you raised $20,000 on your own. And all of that went, all of that money went to help. Obviously, there's still going to be a lot more work to be done. And I would imagine you've got another trip planned and still more money's needed to help more people. I mean, as I mentioned, sometimes an emergency, a disaster happens, and then all the money floods in, and then it's done with. But in this case, you know, any help that can be given, even if it's a small amount, I mean, you brought this up before when we've talked. I mean, you can provide a little bit of money, and a little bit of money, what we consider a little bit of money, can be a lot of money to the people there. You know, if you just even give $20, I mean, that can make a difference, right?
Absolutely, Cindy. The per capita income of Nepal is about $600 a year. And all of the volunteers pay their own way. They serve as volunteers. And so virtually 100% of every penny given goes directly to the people of Nepal, whether it's in purchasing rice or whether it's purchasing the zinc. And for those that would be interested in donating, you can make a check payable to Action Relief Services and receive a tax-deductible receipt. And I give you my word that 100% of this will go to Nepal. We'll be going back in October, Cindy, and we'll be going back again shortly after that. And so if you would like to contribute, you can make a check payable to Action Relief Services. You can go online and learn more about that, actionreliefservices.com. And you can learn a little bit more, get the address and so forth and so on. For those of you here in Maui County, you can contribute 2 weeks of your time. Come with us. You're warmly welcome to join us.
I'm very tempted. You're going to be going again in October.
That's correct. And shortly after that as well.
And that is actually, that time is when the monsoons begin to end, and it's actually better weather for doing work, isn't it, in October, November, and December?
That is the end of the monsoon, and as you mentioned, the monsoon is coming, and it won't make national news, it won't make international news, but that's a time of great need, and when the earth is going to be shifting and these landslides, it's going to be very, very bad what's going to happen.
When you did this last trip, you kind of had an idea, and you had connections you were going to make. What happened that was unexpected? Because I know every trip has things that are unexpected that happens, but a trip like that, that you just came back from Nepal from, that's got to have a lot of things where you just don't know what's going to happen. Can you just describe, you know, what happened when you got there, and what about the trip was unexpected, the good and the bad?
Yes, Cindy, it's been said the greatest ability is availability, and after that, maybe a close second, the greatest ability is flexibility. And of course, we had our plans to purchase these fiberglass shelters, which we didn't. We found that zinc was a much preferable way to go. Also, I was not aware of the connection between the earthquake and the coming monsoon, and I heard about it, but it wasn't until we drove through a village in a four-wheel drive vehicle from one village to another that we drove over a landslide that just recently happened, and there were over 600 people killed in that one landslide, the largest landslide I didn't see it happen, but the largest aftermath of a landslide that I've ever seen. Perhaps,
and that wasn't ever reported in the news.
Never reported. There were 900 people.
I mean, 600 people is more than you get in an airplane crash. You know, maybe twice as much, and it never even made a newscast. And
that's right. And to get to the next village, a very temporary dirt road was made. And I don't mean to be too graphic here, but we were driving over the bodies in the homes of 600 people. The village had 900 people, 300 people escaped, 600 didn't. And there was no trace of that village whatsoever.
Wow.
Another village that has received more attention is the village of Lang Tang, where we spent numerous days and nights over the last several years in the Lang Tang area going up to Cajun Gompa. And that village was utterly obliterated. Only one home was left standing, completely obliterated.
This is a village you've been to before. And
numerous times over the last several years.
How many people were in that village?
There were 80 foreigners, interesting, in that village.
Wow.
And there were over 300 in that village that were killed, and including 80 foreigners that were trekking in this beautiful, beautiful area. And they were killed as well.
Wow. And again, no word. We would never know that at all.
No.
There's nothing in the news.
No, it's, you really have to search for it. You can find it online, but you really have to search for it.
Are the people at this point even thinking of rebuilding, or are they just trying to get the basic facilities for living in place?
You know, Cindy, this was another interesting thing on this most recent mission to Nepal, is that it's home. And even in the case of Lang Tang that I just mentioned, they will go back. Their yaks are there. It's a higher altitude. You find the yaks at the higher altitude, the water buffaloes at the lower altitude. And it is home. It would be the same thing here in Maui County, whether it's Waikapu, whether it's Kula, whether it's Hana or Kihei, whatever the case may be. This is home. And if there is a disaster of some sort, whether it's a earthquake or a tsunami or volcanic, whatever it might be, there's a tie to home. Mm-hmm. And people want to go back home, and they will rebuild. We see this on the mainland after these terrible tornadoes. People rebuild.
But it'll be different, too.
It will be different, but they will go back and rebuild. Not all of them, mm-hmm. but we met with them. We met with the survivors, for example, of Lang Tang, and because we've been there. We've worked there. We have friends there that were killed, and they will go back. Not all of them, but many of them will. And when I thought about that, Cindy, it made sense. I live in Kihei, and so if Kihei was hit with a terrible natural disaster, we love Kihei. This is home, and we would want to get back to Kihei if at all possible.
Mm. So the challenges for them, I mean, we can't even begin to imagine, but we're just asking for the compassion and generosity of the world, because unfortunately, most of the money that's going in isn't going to these small places you visited. Most of the people are not known in the rest of the world, and their stories won't be told. And I really think it's important for people to hear these stories. There's a lot to tourism. I love traveling. You love traveling. But when it comes to something like this, when you can help and you can travel and help, then you're really doing life-changing good work. And you certainly are doing life-changing great work. And you're helping so many people. And I know the blessings that you're sharing is so, so important. I mean, this is not easy work to do. And to see that kind of disaster and to try to even know if you're going to survive when you do a trip like you just did, you don't know. I mean, there could be a landslide, something, there could be something that happens. So you're putting your life on the line, David. So I really just, you say thank you to everyone else. So thank you to you. It takes a lot of courage and a lot of commitment to take that kind of time out and to care that much that you're going to be doing work for these people who really need your help. So, I mean, I think Maui's really blessed to have you do the work you do. And thank you to all the people who joined you. Do you want to mention the names? And we have about a couple minutes. Do you want to mention the names of the people who came with you to help?
Well, you know, I'm not sure if I have the liberty to do that,
okay.
Cindy. However, I would like to say once again, thank you to you. And you're absolutely right. Even in the face of a disaster, Cindy, it's an enlightening experience. It's tremendous to travel. And even in the face of tragedy, there was laughter, there was joy. One village held a parade in our honor.
No.
And they gave us flowers. They had nothing to give us. Everything they lost, virtually everything. They had only the clothes on their back. That's
wow.
all. But they gave this big parade. You can go online and see it with the traditional Nepali instruments. And it was amazing.
Where online would people go?
They can go on Facebook. And my name is David Corson.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Action Relief Services will probably have a link there. And if you'd like to contribute, once again, a tax-deductible gift to Action Relief Services. Also, if you're here in the islands, which most of you are, I'd be more than happy to come and show pictures and give a firsthand report.
I think that'd be great for people. I think you're a local hero, and I don't say that easily because I don't believe in many heroes, but I mean, to be able to do that and to get the people behind this important project and do the work that you do is a great gift. And I haven't seen, you know, much. I haven't seen any stories in the paper or anything about you, but for me, I think what you're doing is very, very important work. So, I mean, for all the people you've helped, a parade and flowers. I have to go look at that one. That's the least we should have in our hearts, a parade and flowers for you and the people who aren't mentioned but also went with you and donated their money, their time, their services, and put their lives on the line as well. And thank you so, so much, David, for the great work you're doing. And I also want to thank Toni Childs for the work she's doing. I've always loved her music, and here's a musician who's out there also giving her all to try to help. So it's really great to know there's people out there who know and care and are doing good things. It's a great story. So big mahalo to all. You can catch this online. I'll have it up on the travelangel.com website soon. Aloha.